punch here, but...
Can I call this meeting to order? Thank you, members, for attending another fine meeting that we're going to have. Has everyone taken a look at the minutes?
I'll move the minutes.
Representative Hager moves the minutes. All in favor of the motion, or is there any questions on the minutes first? Anyone have any questions? All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion's carried. Thank you. We are going to be looking at House File number 1086, Daphne. You have two bills up. First bill is House File 1086.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Could I ask that, much as we did in E-12 policy when these two bills came up, since this is kind of a menu of options, that we present on the concepts first, and then we can move the two bills after the testimony? Is that acceptable to the chair?
I think we can do that, Representative.
Thank you very much. I actually have a wealth of testifiers here today. If the representative from Austin would like to come forward as well. Pull up more chairs. We'll work on being brief. Mr. Chair and members, what you have before you today are, as I indicated, a menu of options. House File 1426 and House File 1086 are two different strategies for providing opportunities for extended kindergarten programs for at-risk kindergartners in the state of Minnesota. When I've talked with members around on both sides of the aisle this year, there's a great deal of interest in finding strategies to close the achievement gap. There's a great deal of interest in focusing our activities and our funding on strategies that we know work and getting the best bang, the best return on investment for the taxpayer's dollar. We have a real opportunity here with either of these bills to make strategic investments that we know work for at-risk kids and actually work to close the achievement gap. If members read the last AMSD newsletter, it discussed the research on all-day kindergarten in Burnsville. Now, I am a big fan of all-day kindergarten for raising achievement for all kids. But what the Burnsville research showed, as previous research has as well, all-day kindergarten is wonderful for raising the floor, but it doesn't help close the gap. The gap simply shifts a little bit higher on the graph. Extended kindergarten has the opportunity to raise the floor and close the gap in an economical way when it's administered in a strategic fashion. That's been the experience in New Mexico, where my proposal for House File 1426 came from. They implemented extended kindergarten plus, as they call it, in 2003 as a pilot program for 3 years. By 2005, they'd expanded that pilot. This year, the legislature has before it a school plus program to extend that same concept of adding 4 weeks of summer school. We could call it 4 weeks of schooling before the school year starts and extending the school year 4 weeks additional after the regular school year ends for at-risk students because of the success that they're having with the Kindergarten Plus program in New Mexico. I spoke to the elementary curriculum director in Las Cruces. She just finished up a time period as the interim superintendent in that district as well. Told her what I was trying to do here, and she said, you cannot go wrong. It's a wonderful program. They're getting wonderful results, and the Kindergarten Plus program participants in New Mexico, they're seeing, are on track to score at or above their non-kindergarten plus peers. These are programs that work in a cost-effective manner to raise achievement and close the achievement gap. I'm lucky enough, Mr. Chair, to have two school districts here with me today, and I'm grateful and appreciative of both of them, because we've got my own Minneapolis school district in the chairs, but also representatives from the Austin Public Schools to show the attraction and the impact of this proposal, not only in the urban core, but in greater Minnesota as well. I think Mom taught me to be respectful of guests. I think we'll ask the Austin representatives to speak first. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how they want to do that.
You've got it.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. Could you state your name for the record?
Yes, thank you. My name is Amy Baskin. I'm the Director of Community Education for Austin Public Schools and responsible for early childhood programming for our district. I'm joined by Melissa Shaler, who is the Director of Special Services for Austin Public Schools. And I want to thank you for allowing us to testify in support of House Bill 1426. This bill really has the potential to positively impact thousands of students in Minnesota and change lives for families far into the future. We will tell you today how we are implementing a program this summer that mirrors the criteria outlined in this bill. Our program will not serve all students that need services because we have limited resources. This bill would go a long way in allowing us to serve more students than we are currently able to do. Melissa will begin by describing our goal, demographics, and the reason for implementation, and I will finish with details of our program. I want to thank you for your consideration today.
Thank you. Could you identify yourself for the record, please? Sure.
My name is Melissa Shaler, and I'm the Director of Special Services for the Austin Public School District. Today I'd like to share with you what our goal, our program that we're implementing in Austin is called the Jumpstart to Kindergarten and Kindergarten Summer School, which will happen for our students moving from kindergarten to first grade. And our goal is to identify at-risk students who will be starting kindergarten in the fall or who have recently completed kindergarten but haven't met the exit outcomes necessary to move successfully to first grade. You have some information before you that really lays out what our demographics look like in Austin. And in the 04 or 05-06 school year, our demographics were 76% white students, 24% minority, the breakdown is there, and we had 41.2% of our students that received free and reduced lunch. When we look at our incoming students, our students that are in kindergarten, our demographics are quite different, and they are rapidly changing. For 05-06, we had 67% of our incoming students that were white, 33% that were minority, and our rate of free and reduced lunch was 52.3%. In 1 year's time, we have a change in our demographics again, which is quite significant. We have 63% of our students white, 37% minority, and we have increased to 58.1% of our students that receive free and reduced lunch at that kindergarten. And we have a number of students who are entering kindergarten who have no preschool experience. And this is either due to an inability to pay for those programs on the part of their families, or they have a lack of transportation, so they're not able to access in that manner. Our limited English proficient students have increased. We had a total in our district of 7.3% in 2001, and now we're at 11.3% last year in the Austin Public Schools. In 06-07, we had approximately 30 non-English speakers that entered kindergarten. So they entered kindergarten with no English at all. We have implemented all-day everyday kindergarten, and it's a center program. We did that in the 2005-2006 school year. And the center showed significant student achievement in all areas, particularly reading and math. And you have a packet of information that details that, some detail, and then there's also some graphs that accompany it. And it's really interesting to see where the students are in their spring or their fall assessments and then where they get to in their spring assessment. It's really quite an accomplishment on the student's part. To maximize student achievement at the preschool level, we prepare students and their families in the area of early literacy, attendance, exploration, and provide an environment rich in learning opportunities. All-day everyday kindergarten has changed the achievement outcomes and expectations for our students. With increased achievement, the expectations upon entry into first grade have increased, providing a need for additional educational opportunities throughout the summer between kindergarten and first grade. I'm going to turn it back to Amy to talk a little bit about what our program is.
As Representative Dabney mentioned, the bar is higher.
Could you please identify yourself again for the record?
Amy Baskin, Director of Community Ed from Austin. As Representative Dabney outlined, the bar is higher when you have all day, every day kindergarten. It's not all about increasing the amount of time, but it's increasing the programming that you provide for all day, every day kindergarten students. So students that come in that are not prepared have an even higher, there's a larger gap in achievement. So it's very important. And as Melissa mentioned, we had 30 students enter our program that spoke no English at all. So they are starting way behind the other students. That was sort of the catalyst for us determining that we needed to do something this summer to at least address that issue. So our program will be a four-week program that focuses on early literacy, social, emotional, language skills, and for entering kindergarten and for students that are moving from kindergarten to first grade. Our four-week program runs July 9th through August 3rd, and it will be housed at our kindergarten center. It's a five-day-a-week program, 4 hours a day, and we do provide breakfast and lunch to address the poverty issue in our community as well. We also are implementing a one-week program right before school starts, the week before school starts, which we're calling a jump start. In that program, students will be, if they're entering kindergarten, they will be spending 1 week intensely in the kindergarten center getting ready to start kindergarten, what the routines are so that they're more comfortable. And then our first graders, since we're center-based, the first graders all leave our kindergarten center and go to home schools so that they will then be entering whatever elementary school is in their neighborhood. So they will be spending that week at their elementary school preparing to go into first grade. We will be transporting all of our students on Austin school buses to overcome the transportation barrier so we know we're going to get there. Our criteria for determining students who will qualify to attend this session, we are going to look at particularly students who are identified as the English language learner. They will probably have scored between a 12 or a 16 on the early childhood screening test. They maybe have not participated in a preschool program, and as we get into kindergarten registration this month, we will be determining whether they've had that opportunity to participate or not. They might have an early childhood teacher recommendation, or they did not meet kindergarten outcomes. The staff will be certified staff and ESL staff that will be teaching this, and they will be provided with 10 hours of curriculum writing time to develop materials that are appropriate for the individual learners, because we know that all of those kids are going to come at very different levels, so we're going to look at each of those learnings and devise curriculum that matches that. We are going to fund this year using title or targeted services dollars, and we hope to be able to utilize a Department of Education transportation grant. We are in the process of writing an integration revenue. We are a newly identified integration racially isolated district, so we are hoping to write some of these programs into that and be able to use some of the Department of Ed transportation grant money to help us with busing. Our outcomes, of course, are to prepare all students for kindergarten and prepare students who did not meet the kindergarten exit outcomes who are entering first grade. We take every student, regardless of their academic level, into kindergarten. So we really know that we need to make interventions and look at individual learner plans to make sure that all students are prepared, particularly those students that come from poverty and those students who do not have English as their primary language. Our desired skills for incoming kindergartners are social skills, the ability to follow 1, 2, 3-step directions, the ability to sit and listen, understanding. We have minimum academic skills, include the ability to recognize numbers, 1 to 5, 4 basic shapes, ability to count to 10, write the first name, recognize 8 to 10 basic colors, understand concepts of print, how to hold a book, comprehensive story, read aloud, and the ability to discuss the content of the story. Additional preparedness is also being provided through partnerships. We are working actively with all the preschools and all the early childhood programming in our community to try and reach out to every at-risk student and every student that will be entering kindergarten and allow them the skills necessary to start kindergarten ready to go. And so we are working very hard with all the partners to do that. I want to thank you for your time. Do you have any questions?
Representative Daphne, do you want to do your bill before we answer any questions?
No. How about if we ask the Minneapolis School District to speak to their experience with extending kindergarten opportunities that they've been able to provide in the past?
Thank you for your testimony. Could you please identify yourself for the record?
I'm Maureen Seiwert, and I'm the Executive Director of Early Childhood Education for the Minneapolis Schools. And We had the opportunity a number of years ago to provide some before kindergarten and after kindergarten enriched learning opportunities and found them to be incredibly successful for children that had not had any opportunity to have preschool experiences. We even at one school, one of our schools in the Phillips neighborhood, the kindergarten teacher had the opportunity to have 18 of the 22 children that she would have for kindergarten for 6 weeks during the summer. And the anecdotal results, her stories about how those children adapted and adjusted and were able to know the routines, they were able to jump right in at the start of the school year and really, really begin to focus on the work that they need to focus on. In Minneapolis, we really see we don't have an achievement gap in preschoolers. I don't think preschoolers have had the opportunity yet, but we have an opportunity gap. It's about time, opportunity to experience enriched early learning experiences. And I spoke the other day at one of the committees and talked about my new granddaughter, Amelia, who has, since I'm the mother of five and since times have changed, babies don't sleep on their stomach anymore because of the danger of sudden infant death syndrome. They found a correlation. So they sleep on their backs. And so in order for babies to really learn how to develop their arms and their muscles and their neck and their back and all those things, doctors actually prescribe what they call tummy time. And that babies have to spend a certain amount of time on their stomach every day in order to really get those same, you know, develop those muscles so then they're able to crawl eventually and walk and all of the things that babies get to do. The same thing happens really with cognitive development, is that if children do not have the opportunity to practice, to use their muscles, to use their brains, to use all of the things that they have, they're not going to develop at the same rate as other children who have had those opportunities. And so we're interested in making sure that our children who are coming to us have the same opportunities to experience the wonderful, enriched learning opportunities that are provided in before and after kindergarten. We know that there's a loss. Kids who finish kindergarten may not be at the place they need to be in terms of what they've achieved in kindergarten, so they need some enrichment. We also know that kids lose things over the summer, especially children that are in poverty and children who are not having the same enriching summer experiences that some of other children might have with vacations and libraries and science museums and going to grandma's and doing all kinds of things. Some of our children don't get those opportunities. And so a before and an after kindergarten enriched learning experience would provide them with their opportunities so that they too can grow all the muscles they need to grow, whether they be in their mind or their heart or their legs or wherever, so that they're ready for kindergarten or ready for school success.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone?
My name is Annie Pearson. I'm a master teacher with the Early Childhood Department in the Minneapolis Schools. And I'm going to just talk to you for just a minute because Maureen covered most of the things we wanted to make sure you heard. I had the opportunity to teach in at North Star School, which is on the near north side. And I also had the opportunity to teach kindergarten at Lake Harriet, which is in the southwest corner of the city. And I just want you to think for a minute about the differences that summer and vacations entail to those two groups of kids. My kids at Lake Harriet were talking about going, you know, biking down to the park and going swimming and swimming lessons and going to karate camp and to Y camp. My kids at Northstar were pleading with me to not have summer start because they were going to be mostly in the house, not because that's what their parents wanted for them, but because that's where their parents felt like they were safe. They were going to be spending most of their summer in their house or in their apartment and a whole bunch of it looking at television and video games. Again, not because that's what their parents want for them, but because with parents at work and neighborhoods that don't feel safe, that's what needed to happen for their parents to feel like they were safe. And so what we have found is that the achievement or the opportunity gap actually gets wider. It isn't like just the 10 weeks of summer. It's like it almost is half again that amount. The kids that are, say, 10 weeks, you don't think they're just 10 weeks behind. They end up more like 15 weeks behind. And so we're really asking that you look at that and giving kids a chance to have some of those opportunities before school starts so that they enter. And I had a chance to talk to some of the kindergarten teachers last year. We had a grant that we worked with the Minneapolis Library, and we had two schools that had before kindergarten sessions. They were at two of our highest poverty level schools. And I talked to some of the kindergarten teachers that got those kids, and they said those kids came in ready to start learning on the first day of school. They knew how to say goodbye to their moms, for their grandmas. They knew how the school they worked. They knew how to get in line, how to follow directions. They knew how to sit down and listen to a story. They had some skills. They could write their name on that first day. When they drew a picture, they could put a name on it and identify it. And they were really the leaders of the class going in. The other thing that the teachers noted is that they saw far fewer behavior problems with those kids because they'd had an opportunity before the class sizes were quite as big and before the school year began to really learn some of the rules and to be successful with them. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Does any members have any questions? Representative O'Brady.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Daphne, I have any fiscal note yet?
Representative Daphne.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiland, on 1086, I don't believe I yet have a fiscal note. 1426 is structured at $600 per pupil, and so that's scalable. For $5 million, we could cover 8,000 incoming kindergartners. That's roughly 15% of the incoming kindergarten class to the public schools this year. Imagine the power of targeting the 15% at-risk students, not only for those students and their ability to come up to standard or exceed, but also the behavioral changes that Ms. Pearson referenced and the powerful ability to raise that entire class of kindergartners next year and beyond.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Daddy. $5 million. And then, Mr. Strong, could you refresh my memory? What was it the governor put into his targeted early childhood scholarships? That's
not of our committee. Okay, that's all right. Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, before you arrived, I described this as a strategic investment that can pay off significantly statewide.
Are there any more questions? Representative McCarthy.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Whoever can answer this, are there any other monies that go towards this title money or any other kinds of funding for this?
Let's bring up the next
Ms. Seaver, could you please identify yourself?
I'm Maureen Sywood, Executive Director of Early Childhood Education for the Minneapolis Schools. We have gotten really good at piecing together little pieces here and little pieces there. Grants, I heard the folks from Austin talk about, transportation grant, school readiness dollars sometimes we have used, but as those have been reduced, what we've been able to offer with those have been reduced. Title I dollars are something that other states have utilized more for early childhood education, but we are doing that in the Minneapolis schools as well. So piecing, it's very complex to figure out how to fund what children need and what we need to provide for them. And as resources have declined over the last couple of years, it has been very difficult. But grants, we did this LSTA grant the last 2 years with the libraries in order to fund the program that Annie Pearson talked about.
That answer your question, Representative Grady.
Thank you, Representative Dominguez. I just got the answer to my earlier question from Karen Carlson, Assistant Commissioner, and so I'd like to announce it to everybody so we often put it in perspective that this bill is a real deal. The governor is suggesting, we probably all remember, the $4,000 per kid, and then he's spending $29 million, and that would cover 7,000 kids. So obviously those were early childhood children, but this covers almost the same number of kids for significantly less.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garland, I'm willing to spend more.
Any more questions of committee members? Anyone that's like to testify against or for this bill? Our bills? Thank you. Representative Daphne, would you like to renew your
Move them. Which bill would you like to have moved first, Mr. Chair?
I guess we were talking about House File 1086.
All right. With that, Representative Dominguez, I'd like to move House File 1086. Oh, and we need to amend it, don't we?
Yes,
we do. Thank you very much. It's good to open your files, Kate. I'd like to move House File 1086 to be before the committee for be recommended to pass and be referred on to the Committee on K-12 Finance. With that, I'd like to move the H-1086-A1 amendment.
Okay. May I have a motion to put the bill in a form that Representative Daphne would like it?
So moved.
Daphne moved his bill. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify for members, what the amendment does is both clarify the intent some and really further narrow and target this bill on incoming kindergartners.
Okay, so
with that, Mr. Chair, if I could, unless there's questions, if I could renew my
any
motion
questions?
That House File 1086 is amended, be recommended to pass, and we refer to the Committee on K-12 Finance.
All in favor of Representative Daphne's motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Daphne.
I'd now like to move House File 1426 to be before the committee, recommended to pass, and we refer to the Committee on K-12 Finance.
Is there any amendments to this amendment? None.
Not that I have.
All right. Any questions of members? All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I hear aye. Motion carried.
Thank you very much. Thank you, members.
We'll move to, in fact, my...
Representative Dominguez, would you like to move your House File 396?
Madam Chair, I would certainly like to move House File 396. My Senate Time Revenue Bill.
All right. Representative Dominguez moves that House File 396 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the K-12 Education Finance Division. With that, Representative Dominguez, go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Chair Hilstrom. This bill actually is in the governor's budget, and what it does, it extends time for kids to have more time in school. May it be after school, summer school, tutoring, those kind of things that can help achieve the gap in education. I'm not going to take much time because I have a testifier that can give you a broader perspective on the achievement gap that we need to achieve. And so with that, Madam Chair, I'm going to turn it over to my testifier, and I'll have her introduce herself, Madam Chair.
All right. Ms. Rose Dix, please go ahead and state your name for the record.
My name is Lorraine Rose Dix, and I'm the ALC Director for Minneapolis Public Schools. Thank you so much for having me here today. This is my first time speaking in front of the committee, and I must say to do this is an honor. I also like to thank Representative Dominguez for authoring such a bill as this, very, very monumental to what our students need in the after-school program. I have some handouts that I'd like to have passed out that will give you some information on the extended time bill that we're trying to get passed for today. Some brief facts. Extended day generated, as well as extended year, close to $10 million. And each program served approximately 10,000 students. Since the decrease to the 1.2, we have cut our hours and length of programs in order to contain costs. Those are brief facts. The possibilities of getting the 1.2 switched to the 1.5 would increase time on task, which is a key strategy to raise student achievement. Also, the 1.5 would allow us to provide additional targeted services to help close the achievement gap. This increase would also allow us to provide more in-depth summer school and extended day programs and eliminate the competition between the two for funding. Right now, our summer school runs for a total of 16 days, a paltry 16 days in the summer. Kids hardly get a chance to get in, get some learning done, and it's time for them to scoot on out, and they're out of school more than they are in school for that period of time. Currently, 30% of our students exceed the caps for funding but remain in our programs. So with the .2, the 200 hours or so that students have for extended time, for online learning, for extended day, for extended year, all of us are vying for that little bit of time. Those 200 hours cap out quite easily. So we're looking to get that taken care of with this bill. Our hopes right now is to restructure the high school extended day program and work with high schools such as North High School to explore becoming a year-round school and expanding from a 6 to 8 period day. Students who are behind would get extensive acceleration in order to bring them up to grade level. The handout that you have in front of you of the map shows the concentration of new immigrant students in our district. Each dot represents a family of students. If you could take the time to really look at that, you would see that our Somali population and our Spanish-speaking population are totally ever-growing. And this is from 2004, so it has increased more so at this time. And so we're looking to get the increase from the 1.2 to 1.5 because our students age out at age 21. And if you were a new student coming into Minneapolis School District at age 16 and had the time, a little bit of time for extended day, extended time, 200 hours is not enough time to get proficient at what you do, especially in the after school and the summer school program. I had an opportunity to go to VOA, Volunteers of America, this weekend to see the students. And they were there on a Saturday from 12 to 6. They only had to stay from 12 to 5, but not one student left during that optional from 5 to 6 time. Not one student, and there were about 80 students there. So there's a large desire in our new immigrant population, but a short amount of time to get them proficient. Minneapolis is currently working to totally redesign extended learning. We have lots of programs that are beating the odds right now, programs that you have to hand out on Learning Works with the Blake School, which is a summer school program that takes our sixth graders and helps them to achieve beating the odds, as it would say. Summer school would be lengthened and organized in focused activities such as algebra camps, science society, space camps. We're looking at 1 to 2 weeks for teachers who really feel the desire to teach, to come in and make a proposal to do these camps. We know that a lot of teachers sometimes burn out, and if this could be a way to revitalize the summer school program, we're hoping that that would happen with this bill. The data that you guys asked for at the previous session is forthcoming from our research evaluation and assessment department. And as anxiously as you are awaiting those results, we are awaiting them also, and we'll supply the committee as soon as they are available. Programs such as GEMS and, again, the Blake Learning Works are models that we want to replicate. And looking at the slides from the graphs from GEMS, which is the Girls in Engineering, Math, and Science, they're making great gains And with the implementation of GUISE, which is GUISE in Science and Engineering, which was implemented this year, we're looking at both sides of the spectrum doing absolutely phenomenal things in our school district. So again, we'd like to say increasing the 1.2 to 1.5 would give us a chance to help not only our new immigrant students, but our clients as well in after school and in the extended day as well as extended year. And we thank you so much for chairing such an important bill. Thank you.
Representative Dominguez? Questions? Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier. I hate to ask stupid questions, so I checked with Representative Heidgerk, and he doesn't know the answer either, so I'm going to risk it. But on this chart right here, they're under, it's got O-R-O-M-O.
Oromo.
What is that?
Oromo is the language of Somali subgroup.
I thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Heidgerken and I are now informed. And then, Madam Chair, another question. Following the newspaper, the closing of schools, particularly in North Minneapolis, and you mentioned having eight period day at North High School and so forth. Would this money help with being able to do more innovative things, or would that be helping with the eight period day, and what would be some of the things that you could do if you had this versus if you didn't for, improving the schools that are remaining?
Ms. Rose Dix.
State my name again?
Yeah. No, just go ahead.
Okay. Yes, the eight-period day that we're looking at North High School, we had a chance to go over and speak with some of the other high schools, particularly Roosevelt and Washburn, who are looking at doing the same types of things. But our hands are tied with this right now simply because the 1.2 doesn't allow us to give those types of programs a chance right now. We're also, again, looking at the summer school extended year program because it's a four-week program with only 16 days. We're looking to increase it to 6 to 8 and even use that as an opportunity or marketing tool for Minneapolis so that we could bring those families back to Minneapolis that want to be able to give their kids that quality time for education in summer school as well. So yes, we're looking at a lot of different programs that would help our students, our new immigrant population, to hopefully close that achievement gap.
Representative McFarland.
Yes, Madam Chair. This is for whoever can answer it. didn't this take a cut back a while ago? Didn't it used to be like 1.5 and got cut to 1.2, or am I not thinking of the right one? I see somebody shaking their head.
Representative Dominguez.
Can I, Representative Filstrom, Chair, could I refer that to the House Research?
Absolutely.
He's got all the figures.
Mr. Strauss.
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, yes, the ADM was not capped for a number of years, and starting in the early 2000s, a cap at 1.5 was put in place, and then that was subsequently lowered during the 2003 session to 1.2. So prior to 1999, it was uncapped. In the early 2000s, it was capped at 1.5 and then reduced to the 1.2.
Representative McFarland.
I'd just like to say that I fully support this because I know how necessary it is for all schools in the state, for summer school, after school enrichment, area learning centers, and goes on and on. I fully support this.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Representative McFarland. I appreciate that. With that, I think I would like to renew my motion.
Just one moment. We actually need to ask if there's anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against House File 396. All right, Representative Dominguez, go ahead.
I would like to repeat myself.
Representative Dominguez renews his motion that House File 396 be recommended to pass and be referred to the K-12 Finance Division. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, motion prevails.
Thank you.
Representative Hillstrom, we have House File 489 in front of us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 489 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee.
All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Looking to adjourn.
On that effect.
Just kidding. let's get back to this. I was just kidding. I understand you have an amendment to offer.
Mr. Chair, I do. There is an A2 amendment.
Does everyone have it?
Yep.
Would someone like to move Representative Hillstrom's amendment?
I can move it, Mr. Chair, and serve on the committee.
All right.
I will move that the A2 amendment.
Representative Hillstrom offers an amendment to House File 1086. It's labeled A2. Any discussion? Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Strom, would there be any districts, if we didn't have number 3, that would qualify, any schools that would qualify under 1 and 2?
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, yes, there would be.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Trump, what would be those?
I didn't bring a list with me, but you probably, Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, you probably have about a dozen school districts that would qualify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Strong.
Representative Greiling, did you get your answer? Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to talk about the amendment, or would you like me to...
Maybe you could talk about a little bit about the amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A2 amendment has been offered because, as we all know, that we're going to be getting our spending targets, and I'm very concerned that we may not have enough money to fund every single school who is having difficulty making adequate yearly progress. And so this is an attempt to narrow that. And as we move forward, I'm open to, you know, expanding it based on the amount of money we get or narrowing it based on the amount of money that we get. This is just my staff's first attempt to lower the number lower the fiscal amount.
Okay. Is there any questions? Any discussions? Representative McFarland.
I'm always asking questions. Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, why for only 1 year?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would like to do it ongoing, but the fact is we're going to be getting budget targets, and we know we have a small amount of one-time money really to work with, and I want this to pass. And so whatever parameters this committee ends up with, I'm going to attempt to follow those rules. So I'm happy to make it ongoing. I'm happy to fund everybody.
I was just wondering.
Yeah,
any other discussions? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carries. Thank you very much. Excuse me. Is anyone opposed? It's my second meeting, so hang with me.
It's okay.
No
great.
Problem. Hearing none, then. Okay, then we voted on it. So
on the amendment.
On
correct,
the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
So would you like to proceed?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. With me today is Keith Lester, the superintendent of the Brooklyn Center School District. He has been my support here on this issue, and I will turn it over to him.
Would you like to identify yourself for the record, sir?
Yes, my name is Keith Lester. I'm superintendent of schools in Brooklyn Center.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I'm going to keep my remarks brief because I brought with me Brian Bass, who is the principal of the Brooklyn Center High School, where the building that would qualify, although our district did not meet adequate yearly progress, the Brooklyn Center secondary is the most significant one. First of all, as I look at the amendment, I would say Brooklyn Center fits, and I wanted to vote on that earlier when you did, but we exceed the mobility rate indicated, where our poverty is currently at about 64%, and our diversity, although that's not one of the criteria and not necessarily a factor in not meeting adequate yearly progress, but as we look at closing the achievement gap, we're at about 70%. Our ELL population is also running about 30%, and that can contribute also because of the need for just for the staff to do it. We're in statutory operating debt, so over the years we have had to cut back, and while we haven't eliminated our staff development funding, this year the high school has $21,000 for a staff of 60 to 70 staff members, and when we're looking at trying to close the achievement gap and knowing that staff development is one of the key things that you can do to change what happens with the achievement gap, the additional staff development money would be critical for us. Also, I didn't mention our immigrant population is increasing and would certainly have a bearing on it also. So we have that challenge in our district, and we certainly are, we border the Minneapolis School District that certain has more than 60,000. We also are bordering the Anoka District, and their population certainly exceeds that also. But Brian Bass can speak to, you know, what we need to do, how we need to do it, and much more eloquently than I, so I'll turn it over to him.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Brian Bass, principal of Brooklyn Center Junior Senior High School.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Dominguez and members of the committee. He spoke to statutory operating debt. He spoke to 21,000 as kind of the numbers for us. But for what we really have to do, not only in meeting AYP, but in providing a quality education, is that we have to have teachers from classroom to classroom providing above average instruction if we're going to close the achievement gap. I assert classroom to classroom because Mike Schmoker and results now at ASCD, Association for Supervision, Curriculum and Development, educational organization has pushed this book and touted this book, but in the book he talks about if students have above average teaching from classroom to classroom for 5 years, that can close and eliminate the achievement gap. And we have students at Brooklyn Center Junior Senior High School for 6 years. And some of the things that we really, really must focus on in our staff development, which we have not been able to do because of the limited resources there, is number one, focus on our data and teach teachers how to use this data, use their assessments to understand where are the gaps, where are these learning gaps for our students, and let's get real specific. What is it in this math strain of algebra that they can't focus on? Is it the way I introduce it? Is it the way that I reinforce it? You know, where is it that the students are stuck with this piece? And then moving into more of a differentiated classroom where you have a multiple ability level classroom, one size can't fit all. You can't just shoot for the middle and hope that hits all targets in the classroom. We need one that's differentiated for our teachers as well. So we really need to do some work with data. We need to do some work with differentiated learning. And over the last 5 years in particular, we've seen an increase in change in the demographics in the school community that would suggest that we need to do a lot more work around a culturally responsive classroom. And how is it that this Eurocentric curriculum can become more inclusive and more reflective of the diverse learners in those classrooms? So we really would like to, with the resources of having additional staff development dollars, really equip our teachers from classroom to classroom to be able to work with our population in eliminating and closing the achievement gap.
Thank you for your testimony.
You're welcome.
Members, any questions for members? Representative Hagerty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm going to go back to the amendment, and it struck me, too, is generally our categoricals are all kind of fair right across the state. We have the alternative facilities aid that I don't like because it kind of benefits the larger schools. But again, when you on that amendment, when you add number three, it's going to really raise some red flags on the House floor. It's going to be a battle. And I think if you would take number three out, it's fair to everybody. If you just, I mean, the 50%, all that stuff, the mobility rate, et cetera, it's going to cut probably, there may be two school districts in outlying Minnesota that may qualify for this. And I think in a matter of fairness, and if they have to go forth fairly, that would be one that I would suggest an author's friendly amendment or whatever.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm open to doing that. I'm open to figuring out how we have to narrow it down. I'm willing to work with the stakeholders as we look forward. Whatever it is that the chair thinks we're going to have money for, I'm happy to do.
Yeah. Because
Representative Hager.
Because when you look at it, I think when we look at the representatives from the representative, put you in a representative state, state right now, but you had stated that there were about 12 school districts that may qualify under this, but I think when you put the other parts of the amendment into it, maybe even less. But even though there may be some real small school districts where there are hardly any students in some of the school districts that wouldn't have that adverse of an effect on this. But thank you for the suggestion. Yeah, we'll work on that.
Any more questions? Discussions? Excuse me? None other discussions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, Representative Hillstrom, would you like to reintroduce your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would renew my motion that 489 be recommended to pass and be referred to the 12 Finance Division.
All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Loeffler, House File 1082. I will move House File 1082 to be recommended to pass and refer to K-12 Education and Finance. Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman, it's delightful to be here.
Thank you.
It's the first time I have a chance to present to an education committee, and I started my career actually sitting in the audience of the education committee for the House and Senate, and was actually in Governor Wendy Anderson's office when he made the decision to put the first state money into early childhood. And that was just a pilot project through the Council on Quality Education, and I'm so dismayed that it's taken us so long to get some real momentum, but I'm delighted we've got it finally established. So thank you for letting me be here to present this bill. This bill is, I'll give levy authority, so I know you're considering a lot of requests for aid, and we'd be delighted to have it funded with aid. I think Representative Peterson has a bill that does that. But this gives levy authority to those school districts who stepped up and had an active and vigorous pre-kindergarten program, and it was becoming so successful and so popular as more and more districts stepped up that in the budget challenges of 2003, the Department of Education stopped the aid program for this, and this would allow our school districts to expand pre-kindergarten through their own choice of a levy authority. And with me, I have as a testifier Ms. Annie Pearson, who is a early childhood coordinator and staff for the Minneapolis Public School. She can tell you a little bit more about the program.
Could you identify yourself for us, please?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Annie Pearson. I'm a master teacher with the Minneapolis Schools.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Annie Pearson, and I've taught preschool and kindergarten in Minneapolis for over 28 years. I've had opportunities to experience the power of quality preschool in impacting children's lives because I taught in a high-fi program for 14 years. And I'm talking to you today because I am passionate about increasing opportunities for more kids. Yes. High Five is a high-quality, literacy-focused early ed program for four-year-olds. It's a half-day program designed to boost children's school readiness skills. High Five opportunities are very limited. When the funding was cut, Minneapolis scrambled to get money to keep some places and programs in place, but the opportunities are really limited. They're targeted at the most needy students in our district, and they're placed at the schools that have the highest level of free and reduced lunch. High Five is a successful and high-demand program. High Five grads consistently outperform district averages on the beginning of kindergarten assessments, regardless of their income status. Early analysis of data indicates that this trend of higher achievement continues as students progress to the MCA. High-quality, well-trained teachers and developmentally appropriate programs make differences that last in children's lives. If you want to look at ways to begin closing the achievement gap, look right here. I invite you to any of our sites because we'd be excited to show them to you. High Five has been doing that for over 14 years. Actually, 17 years. High Five's popularity is evident.
Last year, Minneapolis had over 1,300 available spots. High Five families in Minneapolis want high quality experiences for their children, and very few are able to get them. Over half of the students that come into the Minneapolis schools as kindergartners lack the necessary early literacy skills they need for learning success. And as we screen kids in Minneapolis, one third of the children screened are recommended school readiness programs based on indicators on that screen. We don't have spots for all of them. We need lots more opportunities for young children. You've seen the articles and read the research on the value of early childhood education. It's not even debatable anymore that it's important, that it's cost-effective, that it does wonderful things. What I want to do right now is just share some personal stories, some friends of mine. These are kids that were in my High Five classroom, and I want to tell you about them. This is Travell. Travell came to my High Five classroom. He started a little bit late. He started like in mid-October. And Travell was kind of difficult at first. He had never been in school. He didn't come from a place where there was lots of consistency, but Travell and I worked things out, and Travell was a happy guy in High Five. Travell's mom and I talked frequently, and she really was committed to helping Travell do better. Travell moved to two homeless shelters during the course of his year in High Five. His mom looked for apartments as she got some money together. She would bring the addresses into school and ask our school clerk if Travell could still come to High Five. She moved to those addresses, and that's what she was basing her housing choices on. This is Munira. Munira started school speaking no English, and it learned like at a crazy rate. She was a chatterbox. She also loved numbers, and if you can see in the picture, at lunch, her favorite thing to do was to sort her different lunch materials and to count them. She's counting goldfish crackers here. She made up number problems about them. If you have three fish and two more fish swim over, how many do we have? As a reminder, she had to eat, but she was so engaged in numbers. This little girl was Katya. I had her, not my last year in teaching High Five, but the year before. And when I approached Katya's dad about conferences, I sent home notes, I tried to do things. I could never connect with him. Finally, he dropped Katya off one day, so I chased him down the hall saying, I need to talk to you about your daughter. And he said he didn't speak English. I said, we can do that. We've got a translator. And I grabbed somebody out of a class. And I said, can you just give me 5 minutes? So we talked for a few minutes, and I said how delightful she was and all the things she was learning. I said, you know, we want to set the tone for her future, so we want her to start understanding that homework is important and that school and home work together. Can you give me 2 minutes a night if I start sending some books on for you to look at together? And he said, well, I don't read English. I said, that's okay. I'm going to read those books with her in English, and then she can read them too, because there's just going to be one or two words on a page. And then I'll send them home in Spanish, so you can read them to her in Spanish, so you can work on that with her. So I started sending home the books, and every day he would sign off with them and send them back. After about 2 weeks, he said, could they get two books of the Spanish and English together a day? I said, fine. By winter break, I was sending home probably 30 books a week to the family, and they were going through them. The next year, Jonathan, who was Katya's cousin, showed up. And Dad came in on the first day, he said, of our open house. He said, do we have to wait till October for our family to start getting books home? And I said, no, we can start sending them. Right away, he said, I want Jonathan to be smart at school like Katya. I want him to have the same chances. He was born in the United States. He could be president. And right now, I went and checked on Jonathan. Jonathan is in second grade now. The last test score we have officially on him, he was reading 120 words a minute at the end of first grade. He speaks English like crazy. He also speaks Spanish very, very well because we worked with his family on making sure that he could do that. And I think Jonathan probably can do anything. I'm asking you to think about the bills. In any way you fund them is okay. As Diane said, we just want money so that we can positively change kids' futures. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Laffey, do you have any?
I just want to say, for full disclosure to the committee, not only was I involved in the first funding of those programs way back when, but Annie was hired into one of those first programs, and she happens to be my cousin. She's also a rock star in early ed. When I would be going around door knocking, and I'd be talking to the parents, and then I'd say, well, what school do you go to the kids? And so I go to Pillsbury, and I said,
I have a cousin who teaches at Pillsbury. Do you know Miss Annie Pearson? Annie! Now it's got me more votes than anything. She's wonderful, and you can imagine why everybody wants to be in her classroom. She's now helping other teachers take that magic everywhere across the district. So I hope that you'll look forward positively on this and let districts step up through their property taxes, if not through their aid, to make these kind of opportunities available. I think the payoff is going to be huge, as you heard from Annie. I have gotten a list of the 14 school districts that offered these programs in the past and have had to cut back as a result of decisions. They are not all in the metro area. The list is Minneapolis, St. Paul, Robbinsdale, Cloquet, Bemidji, Wadena, Deer Creek, Hibbing, Hopkins, Thief River Falls, Pearl, Esko, Mesabi East, Carlton, and St. James. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Any questions? Representative McFarland.
Leave it to me. Yes. Chair Magnuson and Representative Loeffler. Could you or somebody explain to me what the difference is between a pre-kindergarten and an early childhood program's preschool program?
Representative McFarland, never apologize for having a curious mind. That's the basis of education, and I'm one of the people who asks a lot of questions. But I'm going to defer to Ms. Pearson here to answer that.
I think the terms have been used sort of interchangeably.
Okay. Excuse me, can you recognize yourself, please?
Oh, Annie Pearson. I think the terms, you know, have been used interchangeably. I think pre-kindergarten tends to focus on that year right before kindergarten, from 4s turning 5, and early childhood programs have looked a little broader and have looked at 3 and 4-year-olds sometimes.
Okay. Representative Ansel.
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Loeffler, as usual, I'm a very big supporter of your policy here, but after being here now since January 3rd and catching up a bit on what education used to look like when I last walked out of a classroom compared to what it is now, I can't object vehemently enough that we are actually here asking the legislature to give a local unit of government, in this case a school board, permission to levy residents to provide a program and a service for kids. That's absolutely critical. If I could go back and redo every day since January 3rd, I'd be voting against every one of these. To make my statement and to force this process into rethinking what we do when property poor districts have to face these kinds of decisions and simply can't raise the revenue to do these wonderful things for kids. And I've now concluded we really don't value all kids the same in this state. That's foolishness to say that we do. I have terrible situations in 2 of my 8 school districts. Terrible. I don't want to offer and push and beg and borrow for mine at the expense of yours or anybody else's. But this process forces us to do that. And it's absolutely ridiculous. So, of course, I'm going to support the bill. But I just picked this Monday on this day and this Saturday to see what's been building up in me. So thank you for bringing the bill.
Representative Ansel, I appreciate that. That's what this committee is about, fighting and getting out your opinions. And thank you for that fruitful information. Yes, Representative.
I'll just respond briefly. And that is, I think all of us are dismayed at the boxes we find ourselves in. And I think we ought to have an equal educational opportunity for every child throughout the state. And I don't
particularly Wells, bring levy authority. I'd rather be bringing money to offer these programs. But as you heard, we have 1,100 people who signed up. We have 300 people who were able to be, students who were able to be served. And that's true in every district. If you wanted to expand this to an aid program, if you wanted to make it levy authority statewide, I would certainly support you in that endeavor. But I think that for school districts that are challenged, that are stepping up to try and improve their test scores, and Lord knows, there's more schools than just Minneapolis that are struggling with that. We need to step up and give them the authority so that we don't have those horrendous waiting lists, because those kids can't afford to wait while we look for the big plan.
Mr. Chair,
could I just add something?
Ms. Pearson.
Annie Pearson. I just wanted to show you Jonathan. Jonathan's family, about this time last year, called me at my new job and said, is there anything you can do to make sure Jonathan's brother gets to get in High Five? I gave them the information about applying, and Jonathan's brother has been on the waiting list. They called me in January this year and said, Jonathan's little sister is the right age to be in High Five next year. Is there anything different they can do? I said I could come here and talk to people at the legislature. So that's what I'm doing.
Thank you.
Ms. Representative Grady, and then
thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to ask a question, but to Representative Ansel, as long as it's this day on Monday, and I know that Representative Ansel and others have signed on to a bill that I have that would allow us to not have these kinds of pickings and choosing, and I hope that we'll take a serious look at those bills, because we should not be providing opportunities to just some kids and not all kids, but we should be providing opportunities. My question is, refresh my memory, when we did High Five, some districts knew about it and did it, and others didn't know about it and didn't do it. What was, tell me again, Mr. Strom, how that happened?
Madam Chair, members, there was an informal agreement between the former Commissioner of Education and school districts to start High Five-style programs. There was never anything in statute about this, and for about 14 years, as you heard, some of these programs, including the High Five program, were funded, counted as a kindergarten pupil, even though they weren't by the department's definition in a program that leads to first grade, which was what their definition of a kindergarten program is. So as a result, in, I believe it was in 2003, the Department of Education staff said, wait a minute, there isn't funding authorized for this program. We can't continue to allow districts to claim these children in their kindergarten counts because they're not truly kindergarten students. Mm-hmm. So, Madam Chair, the department said starting after fiscal year 2004, children can no longer be counted in a kindergarten program unless they're expected to be in first grade the following year.
You'd like a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Strom. I know all that, but what I'm trying to find out is, were all the districts notified and only the 14 chose to take advantage?
Strom. Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, I suspect that districts found out from each other. I don't expect that an announcement went out from the former Commissioner of Education to all districts. I expect it was with some particular discussions with either the Minneapolis or St. Paul schools, as the issue at that time, I believe, was tied into some of their integration issue discussions. And I don't believe there was ever any statewide announcement that was the procedure. And then, as I said, in 2003, the department reevaluated and said there isn't any legal obligation for this aid to be paid.
Thank you.
Representative Grady, did I
say? Thank you.
Representative Daphne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ansels, you're right. I don't think we've had as much of this testimony this year as we've had the past couple of years of parents coming forward and talking about the less, my English is going to be bad here, but you were a social studies teacher too, so what? The lesser educational opportunity that they see for their kids than they experienced when they were in school. And then saying further, the decrease in educational opportunity for their younger children compared to the opportunity their older children experience, a matter of just a few years. I do think that we don't have to make the kids of the state the victims of grown-up games if, instead of deciding that we're going to fight amongst each other for the money, we focus on the kids and make sure that the money goes across the state to the kids who need it most, and leave the grown-up games for grown-ups and get the kids what they need.
Thank you, Representative Daphne. Representative Ansel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I sure appreciate the comments. And just to put a period on this,
it just seems to me it's all about poor people. It's all about poverty. It's all about income. It's all about disparity. And I learned a lot when we evaluated and analyzed and looked at the research on the achievement gap. I just keep coming back to poverty all the time.
Thank you for that comment. Is there any more comment from members? Concerns? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify against or for? Come forward, please. Could you state your name for the record, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ron Silberg. I'm with the Lake Superior Area School District, also with Duluth, who is my main employer. We have three districts of our 12 districts that have this program that would be eligible for the funding again. So I just want to, and they're very small districts, two of them are very small districts, and I just wanted to stress the importance of this program for districts large or small that have had this in the past, that have relied on it. In fact, one of the school districts that was mentioned, Carleton, is in statutory operating debt. And yet, despite that fact, they've been desperately hanging on to that program for their students these years because they feel it's so important. So just to give it a little demographic and geographic balance, I want to support that as well. Although I didn't think they went entirely for a local levy, so we're also hoping that Representative Greiling's suggestions will become wisdom in the legislature before the session is over.
Thank you, sir. Is there any more discussion? Hearing none, I would like to renew my motion for House File 1082, be referred to K-12 Finance Division. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? I hear the motion carried, and I guess we're going to get some high fives here.
Thank you.
Thank you for your... I want to thank everybody for attending this meeting, and I believe we're adjourned. Thank you.